It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. I'm filling in for Sandy. She will be back in the near future. We have a very special guest and a great series of guests today. We're going to be talking about the military, beginning with Elaine Donnelly. We're also going to be talking to Ken Blackwell. He serves on the Voter Fraud Commission. And our final guest will be Danny Ayalon, and he will be joining us from Israel talking about what happened not recently, just a few weeks ago, with regards to the Temple Mount and the whole uprising that occurred there. So welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning, and welcome our guest, Elaine Donnelly. She is the president of the Center for Military Readiness. Welcome, Elaine.
Yes, good morning, Matt. Nice to talk with you, and I appreciate Sandy's work and yours also.
Well, thank you. Good to see you, and great work that you do at the Center for Military Readiness, and so timely as it always is, and certainly with what's going on in 2016 when President Obama issued this so-called LGBT directive, and now President Trump has stated that that's not going to take place. He is reversing President Obama's so-called LGBT directive. Tell us about what's going on there and the impact that this directive has already had under the Obama administration on military readiness.
Well, the issue now, when you say LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, the transgender issue is front and center right now because President Trump startled a number of people, although I wasn't totally surprised when he said, we are not going to have transgenders in our military. The issue is military readiness. That's our first priority. And he said it in a series of 3 tweets. Now, this is the way this president communicates. And the media literally freaked out. It was amazing to see even conservative commentators or people who usually are, like Charles Krauthammer, just reacting, overreacting to this because they did not acknowledge that a tweet is not an order. Obviously, he's expressing intent. But there are protocols when you change policy from one administration to the next, and President Trump has every right to do that. It takes time. But the commentator said, oh, my gosh, the day after, they have not yet acted to remove from the military people who suffer from gender dysphoria. This is a psychological condition. It involves confusion about one's gender and sexuality. Well, since things didn't happen overnight, they tried to womp up a myth or a theory that the military is defying the president. Even Charles Krauthammer imagined a whiff of insubordination and that the general supposedly told the commander-in-chief to go jump in the lake. This is ridiculous. Yeah. In fact, back in June, 3 of the 4 military services asked for a delay of as long as 2 years because they were acknowledging problems with this policy of bringing into the military people who suffer from a psychological condition that interferes with personal readiness and deployability. So this process is going to go forward. I think it's going to have a positive outcome, and people need to realize the media is out there causing mischief with a meme that really is not true.
Well, you know, we have received a lot of calls at Liberty Council from people that are currently in the military or other former military, but now they're in civilian life, and they work with or contract with the military, and they had been up until this change, they had been, and some of them are still dealing with this, been forced to go through so-called sensitivity training.
That's right.
They were forced to talk about what do you do with a man who's pregnant or a man who has a monthly menstrual cycle. Well, men
That's right.
obviously don't get pregnant. These are women. who want to pretend to be a man, and they're having to learn how to deal with those kinds of things. They're having to deal with sharing facilities, showers, sleeping quarters, and other kinds of things where they're in a complete stage of undress. Mm-hmm. Lots of complications that have been happening.
There are at least 15 different directives, instructions, handbooks, roadmaps. My organization started analyzing the full body of instruction to make the transgender policy work. And we published a report on this back in June, and in July, and it is available on our webpage, www.cmrlink.org. And if you click on the links to the actual documents, it's unbelievable how doctrinaire and how the Department of Defense is actually bought into the notion that by changing appearance, that means hairstyle, what your face looks like with makeup or without makeup, surgery, hormone treatments, that you can actually change gender identity. You really cannot, because DNA, human DNA, is in every cell of the human body. It has chromosomes. The chromosomes, XX or XY, determine maleness or femaleness. People can change their appearance, but that doesn't change their gender. But the Department of Defense is saying, well, we're going to change what are called the gender markers. It's a bureaucracy kind of thing. And once that happens, everybody else has to treat that person as if they have changed their gender from a man to a woman or a woman to a man. Now, this is getting everybody complicit in what is really a delusion. The people who would be affected first, and I've heard from many of these people myself, doctors and nurses, they're being ordered to participate or to approve or perform operations and provide treatments that they consider unethical or contrary to their personal values or religious beliefs. And there is no option. If they don't want to do that, well, the only option is to leave. So the extent of the problem hasn't really been identified yet, but I'm very confident that the Secretary of Defense is looking at this more seriously than the previous administration. His number one priority is mission readiness, combat lethality. There is nothing that all the burdens imposed on the military and all the costs, we haven't even talked about that yet, all of these things detract from those two values, mission readiness, combat lethality. This administration is not going to tolerate it anymore. And this is good news for our military. And by the way, 57% of active duty military personnel expressed a negative opinion on this in a Military Times poll late last year. Only 16% said they thought the change would boost troops' morale. So I think the president's on the right track. The Republican National Platform said, quote, "We reject the use of the military as a platform for social experimentation, and military readiness should not be sacrificed on the altar of political correctness." That's pretty clear.
That's pretty clear, and that's exactly what the Obama administration has done, both in the military and other places as well. Used it for a forced indoctrination of the radical LGBT agenda. I am glad that President Trump is focused on military readiness. That's the whole purpose of the military, to be a lethal weapon when necessary to defend us here domestically and abroad and our allies as well, not to be this social experimentation or this social indoctrination agenda. Elaine, what's the next step? Now that we have the president's clear directive, what's the next step to actually get this implemented?
Well, the next step is to go through the protocols, which are standard in the Department of Defense and any government agency. You look at the directives that are there, and you decide whether you're going to revoke them, amend them, return them to what they were before the Obama administration came along. I think that's what this administration is going to do. It's really not that radical, because President Obama put in place all these LGBT mandates regarding transgenders in the closing months of his administration. The phase that involves recruiting new transgenders to come into the military, that was due to go into effect on July 1 of this year, long after Obama had left office. But the Secretary of Defense, Secretary Mattis, asked for a delay on that. Now, I think the delay should have been longer. The three military services asked for at least 2 years. Instead, there was an Obama holdover in the Pentagon, and he whittled it down to only 6 months. So we have these 6 months, and at the Pentagon, they're looking at these directives. I can tell you that the report we wrote was actually in their hands months before we went public with it. It's a blueprint right there. Here are the directives that need to be revoked and why. So that will be a methodical process. And the media, in the meantime, they're like bloodhounds saying, well, why hasn't this happened yet? The president's not going to act precipitously. He's going to think this through. There are a lot of complicating factors. And I think there will be, there was speculation the other day that some transgenders may be permitted to stay in the military for some time. Actually, if there are exceptions, they would be few, they would be rare and temporary. Let's say somebody is at the end of their enlistment, a few more months to go. Okay, fine. But re-enlistment or bringing in new people who are transgender, I don't think that's going to happen. But there will be an orderly process, and the president will direct that it happen. The Secretary of Defense hasn't even sat down with the president yet to discuss what the orders will be. But there was another story the other day about the newly confirmed Navy Secretary, Richard V. Spencer. Mm-hmm. And he was quoted as saying, well, we want all patriots who want to serve in the military, if they are qualified and meet requirements, they should be able to serve our military. Now, some people took this as, uh-oh, he's going to defy the president. On the contrary, Secretary Spencer also said, we will process and take direction of a policy that is developed by the Defense Secretary with direction from the President and march out smartly. That's what the military does. They follow orders. And there's also this little issue about what are these qualifications, what are the requirements to serve our country. Well, until recently, all requirements meant if you suffer from a psychological condition like gender dysphoria, you're not qualified to be in the military.
Yeah, you don't have an automatic right to serve in the military.
If that is changed back, then I think his statement stands.
Yeah. Well, you've clarified so much for us. How do people keep up with this? I know you've got your information there. Tell us how people listening on this network can keep up with this and what they can do to make sure that they're still in the loop and that this continues to move forward.
Well, visit our webpage, www.cmrlink.org. You'll see a new article there about President Trump's announcement. There's also ways that you can communicate with CMR if you'd like to receive our newsletter, CMR eNotes. I'm just posting a new one today. We'll keep you up to date on how this develops. On social engineering in the military, it's really important. It is a national defense issue. It is also a matter of a paramount social issue as well. It's right at that intersection. And we're very unique because we deal with the military social issues, and we advocate for high standards, sound priorities, and we'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary next year.
Well, congratulations, 25 years. That's amazing. Well, our guest is Elaine Donnelly. She is the president of the Center for Military Readiness, and your website, again, is cmrlink.org.
That's right.
cmrlink.org. I highly recommend the Center for Military Readiness. Elaine is and has been one of the national leaders focused on military readiness and specifically focusing on some of the social issues that we see happening in the military. And under the Obama administration, of course, Obama wanted to use the military as a social reengineering platform. I know a lot of people, and Elaine, in the final minute that we have here, I know you've known a lot of people that have really even questioned whether they should stay in the military under that situation. So this is a breath of fresh air with President Trump wanting to focus
on when President Trump said, I think I'm doing the military a favor, he was right, because people in the military cannot speak for themselves openly. It's just not allowed. So it's up to us as civilians to support the military in this field of public policy. It's up to us. That's what civilian control of the military means. So I welcome the support of your listeners and hope to hear from them in the near future.
Well, thank you, Elaine. Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness. Her website is cmrlink.org. That's cmrlink.org. Highly recommend that you get in touch with this organization and stay informed and stay behind our men and women serving in the military abroad and here domestically. We'll be right back after this break.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
When Jesus healed a blind man, the religious authorities questioned the man over and over. Finally, exasperated, he said, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again?" The man points out something we often overlook: the difference between hearing and listening. Now, hearing is a physical event, something that happens when sound waves hit our eardrums. But listening is a spiritual event, something that happens when we open our heart to what a person or God is saying to us. Hearing takes very little effort, but to really listen requires a choice, an act of the will. This is David Jeremiah encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover how to listen to God on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com. Start your journey home today.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Cities across the nation are hauling away Confederate war memorials from public parks, but some far-left activists say that's not good enough. They want to bulldoze over any monument or building named in memory of a slaveholder, even if that slaveholder happens to be a founding father. And that sparked a raging debate across the Fruited Plain.
Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down... Excuse me. Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson?
That's a fair question, the president asked. Where do you draw the line? Now, some say, Starnes, stop with the hyperbole. Nobody's that crazy. Well, according to CBS News, a Chicago pastor has launched a campaign to get rid of, you guessed it, a George Washington statue from a park named in his honor. It's a slippery slope, America. I cannot tell a lie. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Sandy Rios in the morning. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. I'm filling in for Sandy today. We have a very dear friend and a special guest, the Honorable Ken Blackwell. He is the background. He's the youngest mayor that was ever, I believe, elected in Cincinnati, the first African-American to hold statewide office in Ohio as treasurer and then secretary of state there, and many, many others accolades. He is also a former ambassador to the United Nations on human rights. He also now serves on the Voter Fraud Commission, and I want to talk to Ken about that specifically. Ken, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Matt.
Ken, you are on the Voter Fraud Commission, and your background, you have a lot of experience in this area. You have served as Secretary of State for the state of Ohio. You've been involved in that very issue. You have been advising very many national, international nations with regards to voter process. You're serving on this commission. Why is there so much pushback regarding the commission and so much pushback by people wanting to give information to determine whether or not, in fact, there is voter fraud?
Well, the resistance to the information is starting to wane as jurisdictions start to lose court battles, and their resistance has been built on a very flimsy and I think ridiculous argument. You know, the information that this commission wants is publicly available information. We wanted to expedite the situation so we could press ahead in a reasonable way with all deliberate speed to take a look at the integrity of our election systems on a state-by-state level. Matt, as you know, we have a national election day, but our elections are executed in states and at the county level. And one of the things that we know is that there are many jurisdictions that have more registered voters than they have citizens of voting age. And so we know that there is rampant opportunity for exploitation. And one of the things that we believe is that not only should we have reasonable access to the ballot box, but every eligible voter should be guaranteed that his or her vote will not be negated by a fraudulent vote.
So all of the information that the Voter Fraud Commission, on which you serve, has been asking to receive to evaluate, in fact, whether there is voter fraud, is all available from the public. If you wanted to do a public records inspection or request, you'd be able to get that information as well, would you not?
Oh, absolutely. What happens is that a lot of this information is provided for sale to marketers and to political experts and political consultants.
So the pushback that originally took place from many Democrats in terms of their states, but also a few Republicans chimed in as well, was just either political posturing or in some cases completely misinformed, but obviously it seems like political posturing was at the forefront.
You've nailed it. I can't improve upon your conclusions there. Look, there are political forces that believe in that we can be a nation with open borders, that we can have reasonable elections with voters without borders. Those are fallacies, and we should not allow them to stand, because what they do is tear at the basic integrity of our election process and our sovereignty as a nation.
Well, it makes
no
sense.
You have an issue of sovereignty of the individual voters and sovereignty of the United States of America.
It makes no sense to have someone who's not a citizen be able to vote any more than I could go vote in some foreign country. It makes no sense for me to be able to do that or for someone to come here and do that. But also, it makes no sense to not want to evaluate this. I think
absolutely, Matt. Look, progressives have long viewed non-citizen voting as a way to build a lasting political power base, regardless of the momentary trends in the nation. They believe in big government. The nation was built on the notion that our fundamental human rights are not grants from government, but gifts from God, and that one of the ways that we enhance liberty is by putting a harness on the reach and the intrusion of government, and that goes counter to the belief of big government enthusiasts.
So, Ken, what's the next step for the commission?
Well, we are gathering the information. We meet again in September, and we then start to chart a course of taking a look at where the vulnerabilities in the system, where the vulnerabilities are in our 50 state systems. I am sure that in the final analysis, there's going to have to be greater cooperation between states to make sure that folks are not registered to vote in two and three states, and creating opportunities for those who are up to no good to actually take advantage of the system. And we now have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds upon thousands of examples of where voter fraud exists, and we have to make sure that it doesn't spread and that we shut down the openings or the vulnerabilities in the system.
Well, it just stands to reason that there's obvious voter fraud just from a reasonable, logical system. For example, in Florida, there are people that live in Florida half of the year and another part of the country half of the year. That other state doesn't know whether they're voting in Florida. Florida doesn't know whether they're voting in the other state. Or when you move, for example, if you were to move, say, from my state, Florida, to, say, Georgia, there's nothing in Florida where you have to say, I'm moving your state. So they can give you an absentee ballot, even though you're a citizen in Georgia. It just seems like there's got to be coordination.
Absolutely. And so we respect our system that empowers states, but we understand that we're now in an environment that has created new vulnerabilities, whether it is a foreign power hacking into the system to manipulate outcomes, or folks who are up to no good in our country to affect an outcome of a close election. And that's something that we need to underscore, Matt, that it doesn't take millions upon millions of votes to change the course of election. Just think about your state of Florida.
Yeah.
If there were 2,000 fraudulent votes in Florida, it would have changed the outcome of the 2,000 election. And so we know that this is very important at the local or the county level to get this right, to make sure that we reduce the number of open doors for folks to fraudulently change the legitimate outcomes of elections.
Well, Ken, I know you have to go to another interview. I could talk to you more and more on this about the whole electronic voting and so much more, but we'll have you back on the AFR network. Ken Blackwell is our guest. Thank you, Ken, for joining
us. Thank you,
Matt. God bless you on this and all your other endeavors.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you. Well, our guest was Ken Blackwell, and we're going to open up the telephone lines here for a few moments. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. You can comment on anything that you've heard so far about voter fraud. Do you think that there's voter fraud? What do you think about the whole electronic voter situation? Have you encountered any issues with regards to voter fraud? Have you had any issues when you've been trying to go vote? Our phone number is 888-589-8840. You can call that line now. We're going to be, after the break, speaking to Danny Ayalon from Israel. I'm looking forward to that because Danny's going to be talking to us about the issue on the Temple Mount that occurred a few weeks ago. In fact, it was when I was in Israel when this whole situation actually occurred with the issue of these Palestinian Muslims smuggling weapons onto the Temple Mount into the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And Israel wanted to use some reasonable efforts of security cameras and then metal detectors, and it caused a big backlash among some of the Palestinian Muslims and some of the other Muslim-dominated countries. He's going to be telling us and sharing with us from Israel about that issue. But our phone number is 888-589-8840. We're going to go to the line, and we're going to talk to John from Indiana. John, you're on the line.
Good morning. I'm calling with reference to what happened in Charlottesville and the failure of the National Guard Reaction Force to be interposed, yeah, or even the civilian law authorities not being maybe deployed properly. And I wondered whether or not, in light of the fact that there's a special election this fall in Virginia and that the governor there has tried to give the franchise restored en masse broadly to felons rather than doing it case by case, you see this maybe as part of a concerted campaign to undermine election integrity there?
Well, I think certainly Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic governor there, would be completely opposed to this voter fraud commission, because I think he's part and parcel of pushing voter fraud. As you know, as you said, he tried to legalize felons to be able to vote in time for the 2016 election, hoping that it would swing the Virginia state towards Hillary Clinton. So he's part of the process. It's part of the problem. And, you know, one of the things, there's a very disturbing, regarding the actual issue in Charlottesville, there's a very disturbing article I read this week. It's in the Daily Caller. And it's about the absolute failure of the security forces. And that lies at the feet of Governor Terry McAuliffe on the statewide level. And it also lies at the feet of the mayor in Charlottesville as well. But the absolute failure of the security forces to separate the individual, the protesters, the different groups, and literally moving the one group from the park into the absolute direction of the other group, combining them all together. When they knew that there was violence that was taking place and they were standing on the perimeter. So, you know, I think it's part and parcel of what this governor, unfortunately, in Virginia is doing. He is one that has brought a lot of disturbing things, I think, to Virginia. And certainly his intent is to affect elections.
It just seems like there might not be equal protection of the laws there for groups that apply for permits. I don't approve of any of the stands of a lot of the groups that are demonstrating on either side of this issue, but that there should be protection of the laws for people with the permit. If the permit's revoked, there should have been safe conduct or safe passage out. And I just thought that
no question about it. I agree. I don't think we can. I think we have to condemn all the different sides here. I mean, I've seen videos there. It's absolutely horrifying, the hatred that was displayed there in Charlottesville. But that's why we have law enforcement as well, and the law enforcement utterly failed. Thank you, John, for calling. We're going to go to Pam in Virginia. Our phone line is 888-589-8840. If you want to talk about any of the issues we've talked about, or as John raised, a completely different issue, the phone number is 888-589-8840. Pam from Virginia, you're on the line.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking over for Sandy. You've been doing a fabulous job. And her show is absolutely fantastic. I've listened to it for years. I want a comment on the voter fraud idea. I believe that I have read recently that localities in Maryland want to give voter rights to non-citizens.
That's right.
Now, how can this be legal? This is very frightening, because once these people do get on the voter list, then they're there for the federal elections. So
you're correct. It's in Maryland. It's very disturbing to see what these people were advocating. These are elected officials to allow illegal aliens to vote. Now, how that would play in a national election, I guess, you know, if you can vote in a local election, you can vote in a national election, but I would think that the federal government would have something to say about that, and that's why I think this voter fraud commission that Ken Blackwell and others are serving on is so critically important.
I hope he's aware of that facet of it, because
Ken is definitely aware of it, no question about that. He is well informed, and that commission will be able to investigate these issues, but I think it's a critical issue. We can't have our vote diluted. It makes no sense to bring in people who are not even citizens to vote, or to have people vote for dead people, or to have people vote in multiple states. And I know that that is happening. So thank you, Pam, for calling. And we'll have Ken back on later sometime on the program when the Voter Fraud Commission continues. We're going to have to go to a break. We have several other callers on the line. We're going to come back and we're going to take Danny Ayalon. So you may want to stay on the line if you want to ask him a question. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council, filling in for Sandy Rios in the morning. Sandy will be back in the near future. We'll be right back after some of these messages.
Let what you say simply be yes or no. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. According to an Arizona judge, entrepreneurs must serve people in spite of their beliefs and values as the cost of U.S. citizenship. Well, several highbrow designers have come out saying they refuse to design dresses for Melania Trump. Specifically, these designers consider their fashion brands as an expression of their artistic and philosophical ideas because their bottom line is not just about money. One designer even concludes that she dressed Michelle Obama because she shared Obama's values. You see, they have no problem with refusing services to people based on values, as long as those values are secular, progressive, and liberal.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In the Trenches with Jeremy Wiggins.
This show is about trying to catch you up, talk about the issues, kind of zero in.
A frontline report from the culture war.
I hope that you'll leave here entertained as well as informed.
In the Trenches.
This is where we take a look at what's going on around the American Family Association. Give it a little bit of a colorful flavor. It's a lot of stuff.
In the Trenches with Jeremy Wiggins. Saturday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
So, what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. At the moment, there's a lot of fevered yet selective condemnation of hatred and bigotry in America. Objections to some manifestations of such behavior, however, risks arbitrarily imposing intolerance in the name of tolerance. The truth is that any form of racially, ethnically, religiously, or politically based totalitarian supremacism should be condemned, not just certain ones. These days, though, to paraphrase George Orwell in Animal Farm, some supremacists are more objectionable than others. This fits a narrative that has been relentlessly promoted of late by what's come to be called the Red-Green Axis. Its practitioners, notably supremacists on the hard left and their unlikely allies in Islamist circles, are determined to silence opponents they relentlessly and increasingly violently vilify as haters. Our constitutionally protected right to engage in truth-telling about all forms of intolerant, hateful supremacism must not be selectively restricted. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Of course, I'm not Sandy. She is a great friend. She will be back soon. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. And we have a very special guest all the way from Israel. I love Israel. Just returned from Israel. We take young people to Israel every year through our program Covenant Journey. And our very special guest is Ambassador Danny Ayalon. And he also is the founder and president of The Truth About Israel. Welcome to this program, Danny.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's a real pleasure. And again, I appreciate your very kind introduction.
Oh, well, thank you. I could go in to so much of your background. You've had so much experience in the Israeli government and so knowledgeable about the issues in Israel, of course. I want to talk to you about an article that you recently wrote, The Truth About the Temple Mount. Tell us about what has been happening over there with the Temple Mount and some of the skirmishes and obviously the tragic shooting of the two security border police at the Lion's Gate. What's happening and what's the path forward?
Sure. Well, you know, Matt, the Temple Mount is the most cherished and sacred place for Jews and I believe Christians alike. This was the very site where two temples were located and, of course, ruined. This is the place where Isaac was almost sacrificed to God by Abraham. This is the place that we believe the whole world was started from. And in this place, unfortunately, today, after 2,000 years of exile, the Muslims, when they started their conquest of the Middle East in the 7th century, they built there a big mosque. And we respect that. And right now, this place of the Temple Mount is under the administration of the Muslims, the Muslim Waqf, as they call it. And, of course, Israel, because we are sovereign over the area and Jerusalem is united and after it was liberated in 67, we did not change the status quo there out of respect, you know, the freedom of religion, freedom of worship, although Christians and Jews until now are not allowed to go into the Temple Mount, only through a special permit by the Muslims. In any case, since Israel is in charge of security, of course, we have there guards, police, just to make sure that there is law and order. Well, a few weeks ago, three terrorists, Palestinian terrorists, who live in Israel, by the way, they're Israeli citizens, they infiltrated into the Temple Mount. They snuck in, smuggled in weapons, and they killed two policemen. Having understanding that we need to restore security over there, Israel had a very, very simple suggestion. Just as we have in almost every mall, in every airport in the United States and worldwide, why don't we put these metal detectors and we can protect everyone, including the Muslims? And then this is where all hell, you know, got loose and the Palestinians started a whole campaign of incitement, and they were saying that Israel is trying to change the status quo and ruin the mosque and everything else. All the Muslim world got together, unfortunately, a lot of pressure on Israel. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, the Israeli government, Benjamin Netanyahu, had to back down and look for other ways of surveillance, maybe some cameras and other things. But still, there is negotiation with the Muslims, and still the issue is not resolved.
So when you go back to pre-67, you go back actually to 1948. Jerusalem was going to, it had nothing to do with Jordan at that point in time, pre-1948. And Jordan comes in, and they occupy half of Jerusalem after the 48 war. And they're there from 48 until 1967. And they were originally called Transjordan, meaning that they're on the other side of the Jordan River. That means that they're not in Jerusalem. But they were there from 48 to 67. And then when Jordan wanted to wipe out Israel and Egypt and the Syria and the surrounding nations, ultimately in 1967, Israel pushed Jordan back where they were before, where they should have been, Transjordan. And at the same time, that unified Jerusalem, but Israel respected the Muslim mosque that was there. And so, therefore, on top of the Muslim mosque, even though Israel gives security, the rules as to who goes there are set by the Waqf, which is part of Jordan, right? And the Palestinian Muslims are setting those rules. Seems like it's a very common sense thing to put in metal detectors. You're not stopping them from going to the Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Dome of the Rock or the Temple Mount. You just want to have security there, metal detectors, so that people can't smuggle weapons up on top of the Temple Mount.
Absolutely. And what the Palestinians just used it for, incitement, for calling the entire Muslim world to pounce on Israel, saying that Israel is going to, that we have a secret plan to destroy their mosque. And they still do that. And they know very well this is not the case, but they still use it as a political weapon against Israel, because unfortunately the Palestinians and their collaborators are still not accepting and internalizing the very, very simple fact that Zion, the land of Israel, belongs to Israel, belongs to the Jews, as the Jews belong to the land of their heritage. And we were ready, you mentioned that in 1948, we were ready for concessions. 1967, 2000, we were always ready for concessions and sharing the land, but they wanted everything and they wanted us out. And of course, this is unacceptable, and this is the crux of the entire conflict that we have in the Middle East. But I believe that what we see, I think the story, which is still unfolding, that the return of the Jews from four corners of the world in the last century and a half back to our land is an epic story of biblical proportion. And we came back, we built the land against all odds. In 1948, as you mentioned, there were only 600,000 Jews in the land. By the way, it's the same number of Jews who were led out of Egypt by Moses. That's quite amazing.
That's
so the 600,000 Jews who reestablished our sovereignty over the land, according to the UN resolution, the very same day that we established we declared the state, we were attacked by the Arabs. We were surrounded by 100 million hostile Arabs. Just think of the odds. 600,000 Jews surrounded by 100 million Arabs. Nobody came to our help because they say it's a no-brainer. We will not stand. And not only we survived, but we fight. And if we just fast forward where we are today, you know, we are now more than 6 million Jews in the country, and more are coming from the north, from the east, from the south, now from the west, also coming from the United States and North America. It is still an unfolding, amazing biblical story.
It's absolutely amazing. I have seen the video documentary called Against All Odds, and it is absolutely incredible when you look at 1948, 1967, all the way through the years, how Israel survived against all these odds. I mean, there was really no air force in 1948. There were some rickety planes and not even equipped with bombs. And some of them were equipped with like water bottles that they were dropping from the airplanes. It was absolutely amazing how in the world, from a human perspective, there's no way Israel should exist. Israel should not exist from a human perspective. It's only because of God. And not only does it exist, Danny, as you know, it's a world leader in technology. The computer that I'm on right now, the processor is developed by Israel. The USB that I stick in my computer, it came from your nation of Israel, the Holy Land. It was unbelievable that it survives and that it's a world leader in business and technology and agriculture and science and medicine and you name it. Well, what's the way forward? Because, I mean, from the Western mind, people think, well, you can just sit across the table and negotiate peace and maybe just give this piece of land for peace. Is that possible under the situation that you see it? What is the way forward?
Unfortunately not. I think the way forward is pretty much manage the situation and contain it and mitigate the risks. So long as the Palestinians and their leadership has not been serving them correctly in the last 70, 80 years by wanting everything and not willing to compromise. So at this point, still, we do not see any realization by the Palestinians that we are there forever. And so long as this is not the case, we will have to keep the situation as is. And again, thanks to God, and I must say also with the great friendship and the natural alliance that we have with the United States, we can really defend ourselves by ourselves. We will continue to hope and extend our hand for peace. And but at the same time, you know, as the great President Ronald Reagan said, you know, you have to trust and verify. You have to be ready for any eventuality. We see a lot of changes, really mega changes in the Middle East, where the Arab world is really splitting apart, is breaking apart, and there are many, many opportunities here. The relatively moderate Sunni countries see Israel not as a problem anymore, but as a solution against Iran, against ISIS, against all this radical Islamist terror. So under the radar, we have a great relationship with Jordan, with Egypt, and even with Gulf courses all the way to Saudi Arabia. So things are really moving, I think, in the right direction from a strategic point of view for Israel and as a consequence also for the United States.
Were you surprised to see some of the Arab Muslim nations come against Qatar and impose sanctions against them or stipulations regarding their terrorism?
Well, that's, again, it's like a biblical story. Absolutely, I was very, very surprised. But it seems like that they do understand now that the real threat is the Shiite extremists, certainly the Ayatollahs in Tehran. And unfortunately, Qatar is an ally of Iran, and it was kind of a renegade in their own midst. And they just flashed it out. But I believe that there will be continuing changes in the Middle East where, again, I hope that the international community will be wise enough to continue putting the pressure on Iran to isolate these Ayatollahs and certainly not allow them to continue in the path of North Korea. And North Korea and Iran are allies. All the technology and ballistic missiles of North Korea is in Iran, and of course, this should also be stopped.
Well, our guest is Ambassador Danny Ayalon, founder and president of The Truth About Israel. Danny, how do people listening to this program get in contact with you and follow what you're doing?
Oh, that would be great. First of all, we have a website, which is The Truth About Israel, just one word, .org. .il for Israel, and over there they can find all the material. I realize that there is so many lies and incitement by the Palestinians in social media that we have to counter that. We cannot let it just go without the answer, because we have to educate, first of all, our younger people, but also everyone else. So everyone who goes into it can get all the material and would love to send me any messages they can. And we will continue to do that until we have a critical mass in social media which will spell the truth and dispel all the lies.
Give us that website one more time in the few seconds we have remaining.
Thank you. It's The Truth About Israel, without any spaces in between, thetruthaboutisrael.org or organization.org.il.
Well, our guest is Ambassador Danny Ayalon. Thank you for joining us. We're going to continue the discussion on the AFR Radio Network, and we'll see you tomorrow on this same program, Sandy Rios in the Morning. Have a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.